This episode of Pop Health Week is sponsored by Health Innovation Media. Health Innovation Media brings your brand narrative alive on the ground and in the virtual space for major trade show, conference, and innovation summits via our signature pop-up studio. Connect with us at www.popupstudio.productions. I'm Greg Masters, Managing Director of Health Innovation Media and the producer and co-host of Pop Health Week. And joining me in the virtual studio is my colleague, co-founder, and principal co-host of Pop Health Week, Fred Goldstein, president of Accountable Health, LLC. Our guest today making an encore appearance is Brian Klepper, PhD, a healthcare analyst, commentator, and entrepreneur who relentlessly focuses his attention on healthcare market dynamics and the drivers of the cost crisis. Brian is principal at Healthcare Performance, Inc. and Worksite Health Advisors, both specialized health benefits consulting firms connecting high-performance, high-impact healthcare organizations with organizational healthcare purchasers and health industry players. And with that introduction to our friend and colleague, Fred, over to you. Help us get to know what is on Brian's plate these days.
Thanks so much, Greg. And Brian, welcome to Pop Health Week.
Delighted to be here, Fred.
Yeah, thanks so much. You've been one of the guests who's probably been on almost as frequently as our number one guest. It's always great to have you come back and learn about what's going on in the employer space and benefits space. You're always involved in some unique areas. And obviously, we're still living in this world of COVID. So how has COVID impacted the employers and potentially the municipalities you're working with?
That's an interesting question. I think that what we've seen is that public organizations, here we're talking about municipalities and state employee health plans and so on, organizations like that, have their backs up against a wall with healthcare costs. Costs has continued to increase rapidly, and their tax bases have degraded under the pandemic. And so for the very first time, a lot of them are willing to consider alternatives to conventional care approaches that are way better. They're willing to explore those, even though the BUCAs, for example, don't offer many alternatives of those types.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I was wondering, you know, obviously with all the COVID work going on and some of the stuff we've been doing around COVID, is you mentioned it, they're now beginning to focus on it. Have they been able to begin to shift away from just considering COVID and how do they run their municipality organization? And now it sounds like they're starting to get into looking at their benefits again.
Yeah, I think that's so. There's a lot of activity that I'm involved in with other brokers around the country who have access to these kinds of clients. And they are clearly thinking more strategically now about their benefits and not just about COVID.
Yeah, I could imagine, as you pointed out, which is something people sometimes don't think about, is, yeah, the benefit costs have continued to go up, but now these municipalities and others are dealing with reductions in revenue. So it's even like a double whammy in a sense.
Yeah, it's been pretty tough for them. I agree.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things you always talk about, Brian, that's fascinating is this idea of high-performance healthcare. Can you define that from your perspective?
Yeah. What I mean by high-performance healthcare are healthcare vendors of all types who consistently deliver better health outcomes and or much lower cost than conventional approaches, particularly in high value niches. And by that, I'm talking about places where the money really is in musculoskeletal care, cardiometabolic care, chronic disease management, drug management, claims review, high claims resolution, specialty referral management. Places that eat up a lot of the healthcare dollar and that have effectively developed new paradigms for how to manage within those niches.
So when you talk about these niches, can you give us a sense of how much cost might be associated in one of those for an employer group or a municipality or someone else running a benefits plan?
Yeah, so let's take the example of musculoskeletal. In a typical employer, musculoskeletal issues eat up about 20% of the group health costs and 65-75% of occupational health costs. So by the time you're done, you're at 27-28% of total healthcare spend. It's a huge burden, and these new better approaches can drop that spend in half. Musculoskeletal and orthopedics is a particularly good example, because there's a large literature showing that about half of everything that's done in that sector is inappropriate or unnecessary. And these kinds of vendors give the proof of that. They get better health outcomes in half the recovery time and at half the cost of conventional approaches.
And so how do companies or organizations interested in this area and beginning to dig into their benefits package, one, find, you know, identify that, and two, find a group that can actually do that kind of service?
Well, there are several ways. As you know, as you and I know, you can go to a place like the Validation Institute and see whether they have vendors that they stand strongly behind who have been validated, or you can call somebody who works in this particular space, like me, and say, you know, who should I go to for chronic disease management, and why do you think that, and where's the data for it? As it turns out, virtually everybody in healthcare claims that they're a high performer, but the truth is in the data, and so what you want to know is, most importantly, do they have longitudinal data showing that they consistently deliver better health outcomes or lower costs or both? Do they have client testimonials? Are they scalable? Is their process enduring over time? In other words, it's great that they get great results after 3 months. Do they still get great results after 2 years? Do they integrate with other functions within the larger healthcare management ecosystem? Because that's really important that they not just be standalone. And are they willing to guarantee their results? So, for example, one musculoskeletal management vendor will financially guarantee a 25% reduction in total musculoskeletal spend on the patients they touch. And that works out typically to a 4-6% reduction in total healthcare spend, but you're really more likely to get double that because they're willing to guarantee about half of what they're capable of producing. So you're talking about an 8-12% reduction in total healthcare spend by using a particular vendor within a high value niche. Those are really big numbers.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things you mentioned in that was this idea that everybody claims they're a high performer. And as you talked about, there's this issue of data and getting the data. And typically, everyone who claims they're a high performer puts some data in front of you. And so it can get very complicated, you know, as we both know, and perhaps you can touch on this, as it really requires some detailed work to be able to vet those vendors and uncover whether what they're saying is real. So you can then begin to bring in those people who truly make the difference, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a critical point. It's not exactly like people in healthcare don't have the truth in them, but it's close. And what you want is an independent third party expert who can review what the company is willing to put in front of you, and conclude that the results that you're going to get in the real world are, you know, align with the results that they claim they can get. Mm-hmm. And that requires methodological rigor. So that's a special set of skills that need to be brought to the table. It's worth pointing out now that, you know, you happen to be extremely good at at being able to discern whether somebody's blowing smoke or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that compliment. And one of the things I wonder, so let's say I'm an employer A, and I've got this company with my benefits plan, and maybe it's a fully insured package, maybe it's a self-insured package, and I've got a broker I'm working with. What should I be asking that person? Because wouldn't most brokers want to be moving towards these types of approaches, or are there disincentives that keep the industry from doing that?
Yeah, basically, brokers make more if healthcare costs more, the same as the plans do. I think you've seen a chart that I put together that showed the stock price growth of the major health plans since the ACA came into being. And one of the lessons of that was that the major health plans have grown as much as 5.5% per quarter for 47 quarters in a row. It's absolutely spectacular revenue growth associated with that. And that has made them, you know, because they make more if healthcare costs more, they are not very receptive to approaches in healthcare that are going to make healthcare costs less. So the major plans typically are not receptive to this. The brokers typically are not receptive, but innovative brokers are, and they're taking the long view. Mm-hmm. And so that's a frame that employee benefit managers need to be very sensitive to. Because if the broker is not willing to bring you solutions that are going to make things better, you probably need a different broker.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, Brian, if you were looking at this from the viewpoint of the employer, what questions would you ask your broker?
Are there in this niche, are there better approaches? It helps to understand the numbers on some of these. For example, American medicine in general does a lousy job with managing chronic disease. Mm-hmm. So 44% of Americans who have high blood pressure, hypertension, have it under control. And what control means is that there are clinical metrics on people with that condition in the population are within acceptable limits. That's what control is. And when you're out of control and you're outside of those acceptable limits, bad things happen. In the case of cardiometabolic disease, that's when people get heart attacks and strokes and amputations and emergency visits and hospitalizations and a lot of diagnostics that make them cost way more than they otherwise would. There are new vendors out there that have tools that take that control in hypertension and diabetes and high cholesterol and heart failure up into the 90% control. And so the difference in the capability of the care and the quality of the care that one type of vendor will give versus another can be very profound and can result in tremendous differences. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it has to do with the mechanism. There's a specialty referral management organization that has developed a national network of virtual specialists, 200 virtual specialists across specialties. And it turns out that about 40% of the specialty referrals that primary care doctors make, they already know what the problem with the patient is, and they're sending it to the specialist to get it done. But on the other 60%, they're uncertain what the problem is, and so they're sending it to the specialist to get further evaluation and recommendations. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that if you send those 60% of patients to a virtual specialist who doesn't have a dog in the fight, who's not going to do procedures or diagnostics, but just evaluate the patient, that then you can watch the number of virtual specialty patients that get that then are followed by a face-to-face specialty visit. And so far, that number is about 20%, which means that 80% of the 60% of patients are getting better outcomes with a reduction, with the elimination of diagnostics and procedures that would otherwise occur. And that 80% translates to something like a 20% reduction in total healthcare spend. It's an immense amount of money by putting in a step in the healthcare process that's part of the institutionalization of healthcare waste in the American system.
And what you've talked about sounds like a technological approach in a sense, using telehealth, which obviously took off during COVID.
Yeah.
Are many of these technological solutions, because we always hear, oh, we're going to throw this technology at it and solve the problem, or are they more basic blocking and tackling type things, or is it a little bit of both?
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Pop Health Week. Our guest is healthcare analyst, commentator, entrepreneur, and principal of Healthcare Performance, Inc. and Worksite Health Advisors, Brian Klepper, PhD.
I'd say it's a little bit of both. I think that digital apps, for example, mobile apps are given. There's an assumption that they're going to take the world by storm and they're going to do better than the blocking and tackling will. But I'm a big advocate of the blocking and tackling. I mean, ultimately, digital apps are typically help people make better decisions of some type. And the problem with American healthcare isn't that patients make a lot of bad decisions. The problem is that the system is rigged in favor of the largest players. Mm-hmm. And so an app is not going to help you with that. It's worth mentioning that one of the equity firms recently did a study and found that there had been about $50 billion invested into digital health technologies in the last 5 years. And of course, every one of those investments was accompanied by a claim that it was going to be disruptive to the healthcare system, and not a single disruption occurred. So, you know, from where I sit in terms of looking at new ventures, I think a lot of money gets invested in ventures that have relatively little utility, and you have to sort of dig down deep to understand whether something really is special or not.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of gets back to, we had Lawton Burns on here a while back talking about, you know, these various ideas that are just BS in healthcare, I think was essentially the topic of the articles he wrote on it. And I think disruption was one of those terms, you know, being a disruptor. Obviously, we've seen that come out a lot. So what, you know, again, as employers look at this, is it really about digging into your claims data, identifying those few areas? And should they like look at, say, well, let's target one of them. Let's look at a couple of them. How should they go about trying to handle that?
Well, I think that the issue there is to look at where the money is. Mm-hmm. And to say, Where can I have the greatest possible positive impact with the least disruption to my benefits system? So an example of that is claims review. You know, there are organizations that do really good claims review, particularly looking at hospital claims, and consistently deliver about a 17 to 25% reduction, a return of the money that's been paid for hospitalizations because of the way that they've been, that the services have been billed and paid for. That's a huge number. And in that kind of service, it doesn't affect the patient at all. The employer sends in their claims data, a review is done on the claims data, and then 6 or 8 weeks later, a check arrives. So that kind of approach gets employers to wrap their heads around the fact that these better approaches are out there and available and possible, and so they're more likely to do something else that's innovative as well.
Mm-hmm. One of the areas obviously that's been hugely impacted by COVID, work from home, kids at home, all of that is stress, anxiety, behavioral health, if you want to call it brain health. Are you seeing any innovative approaches in that area?
Yeah, there's a flurry, actually it's a blizzard of new ventures in that space that are focused on evidence-based techniques and that have huge investor backing. I think there's finally coming a long overdue reckoning that nothing works well unless the patients have a good mental frame and stop giving short shrift to that area. I think that's one of the huge new areas that's really taking off, as well as you pointed out, telehealth. Mm-hmm. These are areas that just have been given short shrift for a long time, and COVID has brought them into their own. And they're going to be important forever going forward.
What's your sense of this whole issue area of primary care sort of realignment? You know, is it going to be DPC? Is it on-site clinics? Is it capitation? Which parts of those do you think have the most benefit to help employers?
Well, you know that I was an owner in an on-site clinic firm for a number of years, and what I learned was that primary care is the optimal place as the sort of gateway to the system to manage full continuum care and cost. And one of the things that I observed during that time was that most of the clinic companies that I encountered thought they were in the primary care business when they were really in the full continuum risk management business. Mm-hmm. That's the future of primary care is to be able to refer very carefully, do early identification of problems, use evidence to attack the biggest kinds of problems in a population and manage them effectively to make sure that the right drugs get into the patient's hands. Primary care is going to become the specialty that manages overall complexity. Mm-hmm. And I think that the most forward-thinking organizations in that space already do that. And you know, here we're talking about organizations like ChenMed, like Iora, mm-hmm. like Vera Whole Health, like CareATC. I think that there are many old-fashioned primary care groups in the wild, you know, accumulations of primary care doctors who are rethinking how they want to work in the world, especially in an environment where they've been given the short end of the stick by the major health plans.
Mm-hmm. And when you say full continuum risk management, are you in essence talking about they are at risk for cost outside of the typical primary care practice?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that it is up to a primary care practice to demonstrate that when they get involved with a population, that total healthcare spend and overall healthcare outcomes dramatically improve. Mm-hmm. You know, that they are truly the quarterback. They're not the gatekeeper. They're a patient advocate and guide, no matter where that patient is throughout the system, and that's the fulfilling role of primary care as it's coming to be understood, I think.
What are your thoughts regarding direct primary care, DPC, as a fronting vehicle for a health plan or benefits program is it, we're seeing a lot of people talk, oh, it's the future is direct primary care. Do you see that much, or do you think that'll work, or what are your thoughts there?
It's probably a matter of semantics, but I'm not a huge fan of direct primary care because of a couple of things. One is I don't see direct primary care organizations investing in the kinds of management infrastructure that are necessary to identify and manage risk in various parts of the healthcare system. And I don't see them offering up data that demonstrates that if you just use them and their approach, that everything gets better. So I think that there is a new kind of professional primary care organization that gets all that and has made the investments, and that's really more of the future. I think that's part of what we're seeing with Walmart. Walmart wants to provide really good, accessible primary care that's really cheap, but they haven't really gotten their heads around to managing the risk that's associated at the population level that primary care is capable of handling. And so they haven't really evolved to the new model yet. I think there are other organizations in retail that could jump into that breach, organizations like Costco or Target. Kohl's is interested in it, of course. And I think that those are there's potentially huge disruption within those retail organizations and what they could mean for primary care.
Mm-hmm. You know, we don't a lot of time here, Brian, and we'll obviously have to get you back on again, but you've been at this for, I won't age you or anything because I'm up there too, but for quite a long time and obviously pushing this issue consistently for years. Are we finally seeing the tipping point?
Yeah, I think we are. I'm actually more encouraged than I've been at any time in the last 25, 30 years that things are possible, that things can change and for the better, because I see lots of employers, you know, taking steps to do things differently and to say no to the conventional approaches. I don't think that United has anything to worry about from me in the near future, but I see way more innovation happening now than ever before, and a greater willingness by purchasers to be discerning and to be receptive to alternatives that have been proven to work in the marketplace.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, Brian. I know we've discussed this for many years and worked together on and off over those years. And it's fantastic to actually think that we might actually be seeing some of this change. And so thanks so much for joining us this week on Pop Health Week. It's been a pleasure.
It's a treat as always. Thanks so much, Fred.
Thank you again. And back to you, Greg.
And that is the last word in today's broadcast. I want to thank Brian Klepper, PhD, a healthcare analyst, commentator, entrepreneur, and principal of Healthcare Performance, Inc. and Workside Health Advisors for his time and insights today. Do follow Brian's work on Twitter via @BKlepper, #1. That's BKLEPPER, #1. And Workside Health Advisors, www.worksidehealthadvisors.com. And finally, if you're enjoying our work here at Pop Health Week as much as we are, please like the show on the podcast platform of your choice and do consider subscribing to keep up with new episodes as they become available. For Pop Health Week, my colleague Fred Goldstein and Health Innovation Media, this is Greg Masters saying bye now.